G squared. In the first order. Well, that's sometimes called second order, because it's in G squared. And it always comes in even order. Very first one, we were told with the outside world. So the electrodynamics, I always consider E squared. First order of G squared. That's straightforward. We want to get corrections for it. And the corrections appear to be a large number of diagrams, which I wrote one particular one. And you'll see that there's a G here, and here, and here, and here. So this is going to be a correction. Be of the order of G naught and 4. There will be two propagators, one over G squared here and one over G squared there. So on. So it'll be 1 over 2 4 multiplied by an integral, which will be this loop in here. What we're going to discover is that this is, I'm sorry, not by the end, let's say, by B, the bubble. Well, if you want to understand E better, it's 1 over Q squared, 1 over Q squared. The bubble, right? I left out all the indices, the colors and all that. We've already discovered that the colors go through, right? And now with the other one, we will have a delta mu nu, what we discovered for the bubble. There was something that ran as follows. Delta mu nu q squared, or it's called the nu q squared. Q squared minus delta mu q nu. Multiplied by a certain integral, and by a number in this integral, is a number of constants which I inadvertently, carelessly dropped. I had the two supplies to me, which kept, although I find that one of the hardest problems to calculate. I believe it's easy, but it's not. And then there we have the integral, which was an integral we worked a long way around until we found it.
Think about it, it's a correction to this coefficient at the top. You
did a little hocus pocus about correcting shifting origins and this and that, talking about tricks to get rid of the quadratic divergence, which originally arose. However, we still have a divergence, so we have to talk about how to handle it. And the particular rule that works for fourth divergence, fourth groups, is subtract one rule. And the rule I'm going to use here now is the method of subtracting the same result for a different pair. The method I will describe perhaps today, but later, is the method for dimensional. Dimensional renormalization. To change this from D4P to D3.9P. And that's so hard. It's a function only of D squared. So D4P is equivalent to something like PQDP,
yes.
With a coefficient dimension, which is something more pi square or something. That's a number of dimensions. With a three dimension, would be D squared DP, and some other number, 4 pi. And in the d-dimensions, it becomes d and d minus 1, dp. That's some coefficient of up and down functions of d and so on, which is generalization. That's all there is to the, but mainly that's all there is to the generalization. And to use d equals 3.9, and then 3.99, go to the limit. That's what it's about. However, it's very pretty, and I'm going to spend a lot of time, because I enjoy it a lot more than it's necessary. Giving the impression of it. Anyhow, the way of renormalizing is to subtract. This is what we're going to do now. Case. M squared plus lambda squared, large lambda. Then we'll make the results convergent if we first make the subtraction inside the integral. It would be another way to make the subtraction is to consider this integral as a function of m squared, just for the sake of thought, and then consider taking e prime of m squared, the derivative with respect to m squared, and integrating that. Let's say the derivative with respect to m squared, but we're going to have a variable, so let's call it m. Integrating that with respect to this m squared, from the value, and the value x, I guess it would be negative, m squared plus lambda squared, yes. Once you subtract this by it, then. See, this is certainly true, this is the same. That's I of m squared minus I squared plus lambda squared, which is the trick. That I want to use rather than convergence. But of course I mean to differentiate and then do it under the integral sign, calculate the integral, and then back to the end. Do each of these. Each of these is infinite. The difference is not. I want to immediately say that this particular method would produce this final result. Not all those tricks about shifting and so on, all those would be perfectly satisfactory if you completely blind and not notice all that stuff, getting rid of the trick, I just dealt with all the stuff that I did. Quadratic divergence is also taken care of because it's not cleverly enough. Without particular focus, I've taken second degree twice. But I did that to show you. Oh, in cases where there's some confusion, it's always possible that people can get an answer. People are very clever when they squeeze answers out of situations. It's sometimes hard. I'd just like to say more. The logarithmic divergences are always much easier to handle, but much less certain, less uncertain than quadratic and higher divergences. And when we were doing this stuff, for example, we found that one of these produce a logarithmic divergence directly. So another thing to do is to compute a process that we know is producing a logarithmic divergence, and then have no more trouble. And use Gaussian variance to guess the limits and so on. But with dimensionally normalization, you don't need any guessing. The method is speed, which is not just the light of your wish, because the speed is perfectly definite. You know, but I ask when you start, the chances of any person, like around by all kinds of tricks, forces, and push-ups, and happenings, and plus, they go. It's a long way to show you how to do it. Okay, we're going to do it this way. Here. But first I'll differentiate that, and I will find myself needing to do the integral of d4p over 2 times p squared, plus 2 squared times x minus 1 minus a, minus m squared, cube. Then I'd have, of course, the integral with respect to x. X 1 minus x in the top. So on. I'm really worried about this. This is forced happiness. If I see the d4p, I automatically put it. And now at the end, when I'm all done, I have to integrate with respect to m squared, from m squared to m squared plus lambda squared. All right, so that's where I'm at, to see where I got that. Differentiate that with respect to m squared. Second power produces 2. That becomes the third power. Now, of course, it's integrable because there's no divergence. Because there are 6 p's in the denominator, only 4 in the numerator. And this integral can be done. So we look up, you can do it in lots of ways. And I'm not going to bother that anybody who's ever done anything in perturbation theory has always come across this very same integral, sooner or later. It's the integral of d4p over 2y cubed, y divided by p squared, minus something, cubed. And it's equal to 32 pi squared pi. Now, or something like that, all right? This would be 4. All right? Factors of 2 and so on. I'm not fussy with this. Well, I can't remember. I didn't even bother to look it up for collections. This integral here, then, I'm keeping these lines this way so that you don't have to write that over and over and over. This piece becomes 16 pi squared, which I'm forgetting, pi and so on, times 1 over 1 pi squared. L, m squared minus q squared times m squared. We have at last accomplished the integral. There's no problem. It's converging here. It's great. Now we go to the next line here and we perform this integral. So what we have left is the dx, x, 1 minus x. And I'm going to now integrate with respect to capital M squared, and that gives me a logarithm. And I'm going to drop the constants. We will recover them all together by telling you what the final answer is. I integrate this constant up and I worry about the signs and so on. I'll get the following. M squared plus lambda squared minus q squared x, 1 minus x, over m squared minus q squared x, 1 minus x. Right? Okay. Now, the idea is that lambda, in the cutoff, is supposed to be higher than any of the physical quantities. Mass, even q squared. So we only want this theory as lambda goes to infinity. As lambda goes to infinity, then, relatively speaking, you can drop that. Of course, we get an infinite answer because we have a divergence, and that's where we call the trouble began and ends, and we're still with it. What happens to that infinity? It's fixed by the change in the coupling constant, g naught. With lambda, I make g naught a function of lambda, so that the variation of the first order fixes, takes away this. We use different lambda, but it's different g naughts at the answers to this. calculation. Disregarding the mass, supposing we have a large momentum transfer, and disregard the mass at the end. The purpose of this is only to do the arithmetic. If you want to, you can always do it with this hand. All right, I'm not. In a minute, I'm going to disregard this just so. Take a simple example. The q squared is much larger than the x squared, and that'll be all right. So this looks like it's dangerous because when x is small, even if q squared is large, maybe that's important. Turns out in the log, it don't make any difference, but anyway, you can do it with m squared. I don't want to do it with m squared. I'm over here explaining what comes up, and then my point. So I'm going to write this in the log. Lambda squared minus q squared. You suppose that minus q squared is positive, actually. Because it's going to be a momentum transfer for the scattering, so minus q squared is positive. And then we have minus log x and minus log 1 minus x.
Let's call it q squared. So I'm going to make it look better.
This is all multiplied by 1/2 squared, and by the currents and so forth in the final interaction. That's what comes out, all right? In the final, I think I've got time for various currents. With this diagram, this in plus is fine. The reason I wrote it this way is that there are going to be more contributions that come from the other diagrams that we haven't worked out. And I want to be prepared to add those in at the same point. When I discuss it, we'll discuss it in the realistic situation with everything together, not just one diagram. So we're not going to use this formula to make it more complicated than it is in one diagram. Or, since there's more than one flavor of pork, and each flavor of pork could make a loop, and each one of those is the same integral. And insofar as 2 squared is large enough to reflect the mass of the quark, insofar, therefore, for the first Euler, certainly for the human and demon, very likely for the S quark, maybe for the C quark, there'd be a certain number of flavors that we would use that would contribute this, to this formula. It would be the number of flavors whose mass is distinctly less than 2 squared. The flavors whose mass is higher than 2 squared, not much contribution. Flavors that are in between, then you just have to do the integral better, and so on. Why would it look like that? So we put the number of flavors. Right? So on. I don't want to complicate. I want to explain how to do it. It looks like this answer means that the probability of scattering will depend upon the cutoff lambda. There it is explicitly there. And therefore, our original program was that we're going to calculate somehow quantum chromodynamics and make predictions. But we found our theory was divergent. And what are we going to do? Well, we have a thin answer that depends on the color. But the trick is to arrange that it doesn't depend on the color by supposing that each norm squared is chosen. For each lambda that you choose, you must take a different g norm. You must choose a g-naught, which is a function of lambda, chosen so that the answers to a physical question does not depend on lambda. We need the formula for that to do that. It isn't very hard to figure out here by looking at this thing what kind of a shenanigans to type a very g-naught to get rid of that law. Of course, this could also be written to g-naught squared. And to the same order as I have it here, it's convenient to write it this way. Since that one other term I forgot about is this is very much like formulas I wrote before. So I'm going to, well, let's put it in one then. Made in odd. And log lambda squared over 2 squared. That's equivalent to this approximation. We only worry about this log part now. The A is something else we have to work out a little more accurate. But to the first, to this order. As far as the log of lambda squared, it's like this, just as good, which could also be written 1 over g naught squared, although I would prefer to put my 16 pi squared here, so perhaps it's a 16 pi squared here. Well, minus beta naught log lambda squared over 2 squared. Now this, we can suppose depends upon lambda, and we have to make this not depend upon lambda. If we make 16 g1 squared, we arrange all the time that remember this in connection with the previous lecture. Not seeing how lots of more price at all. This, if we suppose this, which is defined as good, is equal to when we will let vary the lambda, we make sure that this is some kind of constant. Well, we should make this is log lambda squared plus a constant. And since it's a constant, we can put anything down here that we want for convenience for the part. Alter, whatever. We make this plus a constant. This will cancel the log lambda squared. No. Let it have a beta norm here. Oh, yeah. So if we suppose that our g's are chosen like this, then we'll get an answer that are independent of log lambda squared. That's the trick. When we do different degrees of convergence, we can cut off. And we change the cutoff. If we change the cutoff and we change g squared that we use, appropriately for that cutoff, then we can arrange the whole thing so it doesn't make any difference where that cutoff is. That's the wonderful miracle of this theory. And that's why we have a theory. Because otherwise we would have predictions that would depend on still another parameter, which is the cutoff, but we'd have to write our theory with explicit formulas for the cutoff or that cutoff and everything else. This way, we don't. Just have to say that it's going to happen. Hope that it does. Let's hope that it does. All right? Well, this is explaining the machinery of the early electric. The thing that wasn't is we haven't gone to the next door. We've gone to the sixth and discovered that this isn't quite enough. That there has to be a log-log turn there. To fix it up, I'll explain why it's a log-log turn. Just, I always want to know.
All the different methods. That's why I like to be in class.
terms. I just had a process. The next one's they're sufficiently small that the limit works. So in there, it works, the limit works. So but how we know is something I didn't prove. And it's not easy.
Isn't the answer to that question that you have a finite number of what you call limits of conversion?
Yes, yes, we'll discuss that. Yes. Thank you. Yes, thank you. Let's discuss it. Yeah, he's got the right answer. We worked out the various divergences. This one was of no significance. Then there was divergences of this kind, or this was some kind of movement. Two things coming out, never mind what's in here. There were things with three little ones. Remember this little table I made? Of divergence. And that's very important when you want to say that. Then there was things like this, then there was that, there was the quarks, and then there were two quarks, the gluon. And the number of, there was a table here that said how many glues there were, and how many quarks there were on the outside line, of which we calculated that as being 4 minus this minus 3 half of that. And the result there here was 2, 1, 0, 1, 0, and everything else converged. Now, using gauge invariance, you can show always that in this case, there have to be two Q's outside in front. Just as came out of that, if one guy converges, disappears, my argument is of symmetry. And therefore, this is really equivalent to zero. Logarithmic divergence. And this one, by symmetry, again, the single power of momentum averages out to zero. This is also equivalent. So is this. So, altogether, they're all logarithmic divergences. There's no big deal. So these are the kind of things that are divergent. This will always have Q minus delta mu, with a pencil. Pencil moving on the gauge. Something like that would be it. Because of dimensions, however, there must be, the whole thing has dimension 1, so there has to be at least one Q sticking out of the front. This has no dimension. This has dimension. Q somewhere. And this has no dimension. Now, let's see. These things, so far as they diverge, momentum. Come out to be numbers times these two wave cubes in. Cubes. And if you call the vector potential of this A, and you make the Fourier transform back again. In other words, if we hadn't had those quarks in this case, but I just got quarks in here, a gluon in here, then this bubble along. We're having a Q square in front, which I illustrated here. I'm saying the bubble is Q square on top. Some number, which is wild. The Q square is double gradient on the A. And because it's gauge invariance, the result must be d mu a nu minus d mu a nu. I'll explain this to square. Two ways to come in. Let me try and get a different way. Well, I'll explain the first one. Likewise, this term involving three weight, but because of gauge invariance, the only thing you can write that has that property is this kind of a thing. Go along with this one. And furthermore, these four as forays, and they will turn out to be of this form. Not only that, but the summates of every one of these things will be just adjusted right, so that the combination of these things with the coefficients, all the coefficients will be right, so that this is equivalent to F mu times a number, which involves this Lagrangian law. I mean, as far as this divergence, it's in a number of places. It's a lot of divergence problems like this. And not so that if I had computed this one or this one, I would have got the same result. The reason it has to have this form is gauge invariance. If I did not destroy the gauge invariance by the cutoff method, the particular cutoff method I used, the form does not destroy gauge invariance. So therefore, I would go right. When I change the form, I have to be more clever. Likewise, this thing is going to involve two sides. And this one is going to involve two size and A. This one corresponds to changing the coupling constant here. This one corresponds to this. There is a term, psi squared times the S of the form times psi. So this term that we're getting here corresponds to the idea of changing the constant. I have just erased something here that I didn't think I'd need, but I see. When I change lambda, I'll change g because I'm going to suck that number into the original 0 over 1 over g naught squared f mu nu, which is what I started with. And then these corrections are going to produce corrections. This thing times f mu. And I'm going to say, I could have started with a G, I'll make this G change the that number. In other words, 1 over G squared will vary in such a way as to eat that number. And that's what those formulas are for 1 over G squared. They're just designed to eat these logs, which they do perfectly. The gauge invariance enables to know that all these are going to all go together in one second. You just have to look at the higher order divergence to find out if this ever stops. So what do we mean? But we have to show that we don't keep on getting more and more trouble. Which I'll show you why. Trying to make this even clearer, perhaps, we look at it another way. We originally had to do an integral that looks like this. Then there's another term, which I'll write as a factor. Psi bar by gradient dagger minus a dagger psi. Right? Which I'm going to write like this. Oh, it looks like a psi. This over psi and also over a. That's the kind of thing we're trying to do. Now, imagine first that I had just done this integral completely. It would be nice, you know, to do it. Arbitrary a. This is some terrifying functional of a. It would be done.
What's that?
What? one over, no, the determinant. Yes, the determinant of the Dirac operator I gradient minus M minus A with some color. Yes, that's just what it is. It's just saying the same thing. We can't work this out either. Now we can expand this by perturbation theory and try to make a calculation. But we discover that this is meaning simple for very short distances. Time event. For very short distances, there's some trouble. The trouble comes from too many of these gradients up to each other. The propagators from this thing have delta functions in the origin. So for very high frequency A, this function has to be discussed. This is a little bit wrong. So we have to fix it a little bit. It's still a determinant. It's fixed a little bit by a cutoff. And when we fix it by the cutoff, we discover that this thing is E to the I times log lambda. That's to represent the divergence. Multiplied by another function of A. Of course, it always write it down. But insofar, this only involves high frequencies, short distances. A is at two points very close together. Right? And if everything has been done right, since this expression here is gauge invariant with respect to A, then if I make a gauge transformation A and then fix up the psi, get the same answer. This has to be a gauge invariant expression in A, which involves short distance A. And as low an order as possible, or whatever, find out what it's like by looking. We discovered over there that it involved the gradient of A squared. But we know that it's gauge invariant, and therefore if I did it completely, I would get the whole string. I could only get this. The only gauge invariant expression which starts like that. And it starts like that is a statement of the forms that we got. By the way, we didn't notice, but that this thing, this kind of propagator, is just, see, if I put an A on each side of this, this becomes A nu squared and two gradients. Well, that's D mu squared. Figure out which way the square goes which way. The other one is Q mu A mu, Q nu A mu, or Q mu, which is the other way. If we had written this,
wait a minute, suppose
between the medium high and very high frequencies is what I'm integrating over to see what happens if I turn on medium high. That will produce a number of terms and will involve the logarithm of the very high, of the medium high frequency. And the coefficient of that log for most pieces will again have to be data-bearing and have the same kind of form.